The content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. Hello, this is Mark Newman from the Triangle Radio Reading Service. For the next half hour, I'll share with you information from various medical sources. From the Mayo Clinic Health Letter, neck pain. Maintain good posture, keep moving. Your neck pain has returned with its usual dull ache and stiffness, and your natural indication is to spend a few days resting your neck. While this is a common instinct among the estimated 10% of adults experiencing neck pain at any given time, it's often not the best plan. As long as you're not dealing with a serious problem, staying active and improving fitness and function of neck muscles are two of the most effective forms of therapy for neck pain. Unclear causes. Neck pain can be mild to severe and can have a wide variety of causes. Most often neck pain involves sharp or dull pain or neck stiffness. Although the pain and stiffness can be enough to interfere with daily tasks, it's usually not related to a serious problem. Occasionally, neck pain warrants prompt medical care. This includes pain related to a neck injury or pain, numbness, or tingling that radiates to the shoulder or arm or coincides with arm or leg weakness, walking difficulty, or bladder or bowel dysfunction. Pain that worsens at night is associated with fever or weight loss or comes on before or with a headache may also signal a condition that needs prompt evaluation. Muscle tension and strain is one of the most common causes of neck pain, and it typically occurs at the back of the neck and upper back. A common cause is poor posture combined with too many hours hunched over while doing tasks such as driving, computer work, handicrafts, or project at a workbench. Other contributing causes can include tension, stress, or poor sleep. Even seemingly minor things such as sleeping in an awkward position, holding a telephone against your head and shoulder, or clenching your jaw can be contributing causes. With age, cushioning discs between the vertebrae of your spine can stiffen or degenerate, providing less shock absorption and reducing the neck's ability to evenly distribute weight on the small joints in the neck, which are facet joints. Facet joints can wear over time and become painful. Discs and joint degeneration can cause pain in their own right, but they can also trigger painful muscle tension. The main step of neck pain diagnosis is to rule out more serious medical problems. These may include infection, inflammatory arthritis, such as rheumatoid arthritis, shingles, injury-related problems, cardiovascular issues, or cancer. Beyond that, trying to identify a cause is often unproductive. Neck function and pain perception are very complicated with many interwoven elements. Research has shown that it's difficult to find a cause and effect relationship between X-ray or MRI findings and what exactly is causing your neck pain. In most cases, determining a cause doesn't usually change initial treatment. Fortunately, with basic care, most people experience a complete recovery in 4 to 6 weeks. Basic first steps. During the first few weeks of neck pain, basic self-care steps are often the optimal form of treatment to speed recovery. And these steps include, number one, staying active. If there has been no serious injury, staying active is one of the best ways to speed healing. Still, be sure to pace yourself and take occasional 10 to 15 minute breaks to rest your neck if you feel you need it. Number two, reducing stress with relaxation. Tense muscles may benefit from stress reduction techniques such as deep breathing, meditation, and progressive muscle relaxation. A heating pad or a warm bath or shower used for 10 to 15 minutes at a time may aid in muscle relaxation. Gentle massage also may be helpful. Gentle exercise such as walking can help reduce stress and promote relaxation. Number three, short-term non-prescription pain medication use or an ice pack. Basic pain-relieving drugs may help you feel better and help you stay active. An ice pack wrapped in a towel applied to the painful area for up to 20 minutes several times a day may also relieve pain. Number four, improving posture. Avoid positions that cause your head to lean to one side or tilt downward or upward for extended periods. If you can't avoid leaning or hunching, take frequent breaks to relax your neck or to use it in a different way. And finally, gentle neck stretching. This can help restore a sustained neck range of motion and stretch tense muscles, reducing pain. Ask your doctor about stretching exercises and techniques that are appropriate for your circumstances. If you have sharp or electric pain while stretching, talk to your doctor or physical therapist. Neck rotation and neck tilting are common neck stretches. Once the worst pain has subsided, start the exercises slowly and gently. Move only as far as your discomfort allows. Generally, you'll want to hold each stretch for at least 30 seconds. A third stretching exercise is neck bending, in which you bend your neck forward as if trying to touch your chin to your chest. Pain that nags. If neck pain doesn't respond to these basic care steps within 2 weeks, additional treatment options may be considered. Prescription medications such as pain medications, muscle relaxants, or certain low-dose antidepressants may help provide pain relief and allow for better sleep. Physical therapy is an effective treatment option for neck pain. This may include learning more targeted stretching and strengthening exercises. A number of other treatment techniques can be helpful, including trigger point injections, acupuncture, non-forceful chiropractic manipulation, or manual therapy treatments or injections of a pain-reducing drug into arthritic facet joints. However, even when these techniques are helpful, they typically work best on a foundation of strength, posture, and function improvement gained through physical therapy. Adrenal insufficiency. Replacing hormones. You haven't felt like yourself in recent weeks, and then you seem to pick up a mild infection that left you absolutely exhausted, with aching joints, and without much appetite. Turns out it wasn't an infection at all. As your symptoms dragged on, you visited your doctor and were diagnosed with chronic primary adrenal insufficiency, also known as Addison's disease. There are a few different forms of adrenal insufficiency, but they're all caused by insufficient production of hormones from the adrenal glands. Ailing adrenals. Adrenal glands are located on the top of each kidney. Hormones secreted by the adrenal glands include cortisol. This helps your body respond to stress, such as from an injury or infection. It also helps glucose metabolism and helps with proper cardiovascular function. Aldosterone. This helps maintain proper blood pressure through the balance of sodium, potassium, and water in the body. There are two main categories of adrenal insufficiency. Number one, primary adrenal insufficiency. This occurs when your adrenal gland is diseased or damaged. Most often, this takes the form of a long-term or chronic disease, Addison's disease, that occurs when your own immune system mistakenly attacks and destroys adrenal gland tissues. Number two, secondary adrenal insufficiency. The pituitary gland located in the brain makes a hormone called adrenocorticotropic hormone, which stimulates the adrenal gland to produce cortisol. If the pituitary gland is somehow damaged or altered, it can affect adrenal gland cortisol secretion, even if the adrenal gland is healthy. Secondary adrenal insufficiency is most commonly caused by medications such as prednisone or intra-articular injections with steroids or steroid creams. In this situation, the adrenal gland may take days to months to recover its function and restore proper cortisol production. Progressive symptoms. Signs and symptoms of adrenal insufficiency often come on gradually and progressively worsen over months. Diagnosis is sometimes delayed because early symptoms can easily be mistaken for something else. The most common signs and symptoms include muscle weakness or fatigue, muscle, joint, or abdominal pains, decreased appetite, and weight loss. However, signs and symptoms can also include lightheadedness, feeling wiped out by an ordinary illness, depression, nausea, vomiting, or diarrhea, salt craving or darkening of the skin, especially on the face and hands, or on moles, scars, and skin folds, is seen only with primary adrenal insufficiency. These symptoms can suddenly and rapidly develop into an adrenal crisis. This can occur in someone who has been diagnosed with adrenal insufficiency or in someone who has yet to be diagnosed. Often, an adrenal crisis is triggered by health-related stress, such as an illness, surgical procedure, or serious injury. These are also the times that higher cortisol production would usually occur in someone without adrenal insufficiency. As symptoms of adrenal crisis escalate, most people feel terrible, perhaps with severe abdominal pain, nausea, vomiting, and lightheadedness. They appropriately realize that emergency care is required and seek it out. Some people may pass out, requiring help from others. An adrenal crisis can result in death if not properly treated. Stabilizing hormones. Adrenal insufficiency can be confirmed or ruled out with blood tests. Although there's no cure, primary adrenal insufficiency can be effectively managed by taking cortisol and aldosterone replacement hormones. The goal is to stabilize hormone levels and relieve signs and symptoms. Cortisol is replaced by an oral corticosteroid such as hydrocortisone, while aldosterone is replaced by an oral mineralocorticosteroid called fludrocortisone. The dose is often adjusted based on signs of undertreatment, such as incomplete relief of symptoms, or signs of overtreatment, such as weight gain or puffy skin. Treatment plans also involve preparation for the possibility of an adrenal crisis, have an individualized written action plan for times when you may be at heightened risk of adrenal crisis, including during times of health stress, such as an illness or a medical procedure, and also for times when worsening symptoms indicate you may be headed toward an adrenal crisis. Anxiety disorders, when worry takes over. An occasional bout of anxiety is normal. Life's challenges or major decisions are bound to trigger some degree of worry or fear. These uncomfortable feelings tend to resolve as you work through the situation. But for people with an anxiety disorder, the worries and distress don't go away as easily. In fact, they may grow severe enough to disrupt daily activities and relationships. It's important not to minimize these feelings when they occur. Help is available. Types of anxiety disorders. In older adults, the most common anxiety disorder is generalized anxiety disorder. Generalized anxiety disorder is marked by excessive anxiety or worry across different areas such as relationships, finances, and health. Common symptoms include fatigue, difficulty concentration, irritability, sleep problems, and feeling restless, tense, or on edge. Other anxiety disorders include panic disorder. People with panic disorder experience recurrent panic attacks. Sudden periods of intense fear seemingly out of the blue. Typical signs and symptoms include heart palpitations or an accelerated heart rate, sweating, shaking, sensations of shortness of breath, and a feeling of impending doom or an urgent need to escape. Phobias. This anxiety stems from intense fear and avoidance of something specifically, such as an animal, object, situation, or environment. Social anxiety disorder. Also known as social phobia, this condition involves a significant fear of social or performance situations due to worries of embarrassment, judgment, or rejection. The condition may lead to avoidance of social settings and difficulty forming or keeping relationships. Sometimes more than one anxiety disorder may be present or may be paired with another mental health condition such as depression, post-traumatic stress disorder, or substance abuse. this can compound symptoms. Getting a diagnosis. If excess worry or fear is taking a toll on your life, talk to your doctor. You may be given a brief questionnaire to assess severity of anxiety, and you may be asked to discuss your thoughts, feelings, and behaviors to help pinpoint a diagnosis. It's important to answer these questions as honestly as possible. If appropriate, you may be referred to a mental health specialist, such as a psychologist or psychiatrist. Anxiety disorders are generally treated with talk therapy, psychotherapy, medication, or a combination of the two. The role of therapy. Cognitive behavioral therapy has been found to be the most effective form of psychotherapy for anxiety disorders. Cognitive behavioral therapy focuses on teaching you specific skills to restructure your thoughts, improve your symptoms, and allow you to gradually return to the activities you may have avoided because of anxiety. Exposure therapy is a particularly effective component of cognitive behavioral therapy. With this technique, you develop a plan to gradually but repeatedly face a specific phobia in a predictable and controllable way until your anxiety is more manageable. Medication options. Several types of medications are available to relieve symptoms of anxiety, including selective serotonin reuptake inhibitors, or SSRIs, or serotonin and norepinephrine reuptake inhibitors, SNRIs. These classes of drugs are typically recommended as a first-line treatment for anxiety disorders in adults, often paired with cognitive behavioral therapy. Although classified as antidepressants, SSRIs and SNRIs impact the chemical messengers or neurotransmitters used to communicate between brain cells, particularly those that regulate mood. Common SSRIs include Celexa, Lexapro, Prozac, Paxil, Paxiva, and Zoloft. SNRIs include Cymbalta and Effexor XR. It may take several weeks to notice whether the drug is effective. Work with your doctor to find a dosage that provides a noticeable benefit along with minimal side effects. Benzodiazepines. If you have anxiety that's severe enough to disrupt daily function, a benzodiazepine such as Xanax, Valium, or Ativan may be given short-term in the early stages of treatment as you adjust to an SSRI. Buspirone. This anti-anxiety drug reduces symptoms of general anxiety disorder. Its effectiveness is similar to benzodiazepines, but it doesn't carry the same risk of dependence. And finally, beta blockers. Developed for heart problems, this class of drugs, including atenolol or Tenormin and propranolol and Enderol LA, may be used to treat short-term bouts of anxiety by controlling its physical effects, such as a rapid heart rate, dizziness, and sweating. Other valuable resources. Along with your treatment plan, there are healthy steps you can take to reduce the role of anxiety in your life. Stress management techniques, including relaxed breathing, meditation, and regular exercise, can have a major impact on helping you keep calm and enhancing your mood. Don't forget the role of social support. You might benefit from an online or in-person support group, allowing you to share your struggles and achievements with others fighting the same battle. Staying connected with others helps combat the avoidance that's common with anxiety disorders. Second opinion. I was recently diagnosed with Parkinson's disease. Is it safe for me to continue to participate in an exercise program at my gym? Answer. Exercise is an important part of a healthy life for all people and for people with a neurodegenerative disease such as Parkinson's disease. Exercise is vital to maintaining mobility and daily function. In fact, Mayo Clinic experts on Parkinson's disease point to regular aerobic exercise as a means of slowing the disease's progression. A large ongoing study known as the Parkinson's Outcomes Project has demonstrated some of these benefits. Researchers have found that people with Parkinson's who began exercising at the start of the study and consistently exercised for 2 years achieved improved mobility and a better quality of life. In the study, the amount of exercise needed for these benefits was at least 2.5 hours per week. In addition, a study published this year found high-intensity exercise to be both safe and feasible for people with Parkinson's disease. Further study is recommended to see whether high-intensity exercise will have a different effect on Parkinson's symptoms than does moderate-intensity exercise. If you have Parkinson's and currently exercise, continue to safely do so. If you haven't been on a regular exercise program, it's worth considering. An ideal exercise program includes a mixture of aerobic activities such as brisk walking, swimming, or jogging, strength training using weights or resistant bands, and movements that improve flexibility such as stretching or yoga. Talk to your doctor or physical therapist about an exercise program to fit any limitations you may have. Question: how can you tell me when a headache requires additional diagnostic testing? Answer: headaches come with a wide range of accompanying symptoms and severity. Most often they are due to a primary headache disorder such as a tension-type headache or a migraine. In older adults, the majority of headaches are still primary in nature. However, older adults are more likely than their younger counterparts to experience a secondary headache disorder. A secondary headache is when the headache pain is a symptom of an underlying problem or condition. An ice cream headache is an example of a secondary headache that isn't a worrisome cause. However, some secondary headaches may be warning signs of something more serious, such as an aneurysm or a tumor. Certain red flag characteristics are more worrisome, represented by the acronym SNOOP4, S-N-O-O-P-4. These headache characteristics include S, systemic symptoms accompanied by fever, chills, night sweats, or unintentional weight loss. N, neurologic symptoms accompanied by signs and symptoms such as weakness, numbness, trouble walking, confusion, seizures, or difficulty staying alert or maintaining consciousness. O, onset, begins suddenly or abruptly, such as severe headache that peaks within 1 to 2 minutes, like thunderclap headache. O, older age, begins to occur or progress after 50. P, pattern change, changes in frequency, severity, or characters, or character that's different from any previously experienced headaches. For example, if you normally have mild visual symptoms with your headaches, a dramatic increase in visual symptoms may be concerning. P, progressive, attacks that worsen over time. P, precipitated by exertion, occurs with a cough, sexual activity, bowel movements, bearing down, or other activity. And finally, P, positional worsening, changes in severity depending on whether you're upright or lying down. Talk to your doctor if you're having new headaches or headaches that seem out of the ordinary for you. If a severe headache comes on suddenly, seek emergency medical attention immediately. My cat scratched me while I was trimming his claws and the wound later became infected. Are cat scratches a special concern? Answer: cat scratch fever are more than a rock and roll song. It's more than a rock and roll song. A bite or scratch from a cat carries particular risks and infection is common. Cat scratch disease is a specific type of bacterial infection that occurs when a cat bites or scratches hard enough to break the skin's surface or licks an open wound. It's estimated that 40% of cats carry this particular bacterium, usually after an exposure to fleas or another animal that was exposed. However, most cats with the infection show no signs of illness. Symptoms of cat scratch disease appear within 2 weeks after the contact with an infected animal. Swelling and redness occur around the wound, and you may experience a fever, headache, poor appetite, and fatigue. The most notable characteristic of the disease is tender and swollen lymph nodes near the wound that typically remain swollen for months. Although the disease will clear on its own in healthy people, treatment with antibiotics may be recommended. Rarely the disease can cause serious complications, especially in children under 5 and people with weakened immune systems. A Mayo Clinic study reported that 1 in 3 people seeking treatment for cat bites on the hand needed to be hospitalized, and the majority of those hospitalized needed surgery to remove infected tissue. That is because penetration was deep enough to deposit bacteria into the joints or protective layers around the tendons. Prevent infection from a cat bite or scratch with these tips. Wash your hands after contact with a cat. Keep your cat's claws trimmed and use care when grooming your pet. Don't roughhouse or provoke a cat. Don't allow young children to chase or grab your cat. Wash any bites or scratches well with soap and running water. Seek medical attention when a cat bites a person. Even if the wound appears small, it may be deep. Make sure your tetanus vaccination, which needs to be updated every 10 years, is current. Report any bites from a feral or stray cat. Preventive treatment for rabies may be recommended. Keep cats indoors to minimize their exposure to infected animals. And finally, treat your cat with a flea prevention medication. Question: do you recommend a ketogenic diet as a way to lose weight? Answer: for most people, no, particularly if they're trying it without medical supervision. A ketogenic diet greatly restricts carbohydrate intake to fewer than 50 grams a day. It keeps protein intake modest, but allows you to eat as much fat, preferably from healthier fat sources such as olive oil, nuts, or avocados, as needed to satisfy hunger. Getting most of your energy from fat forces your body into ketosis, an energy pathway in which the liver releases partially burned fat that your body uses in place of carbohydrates for energy. Various diets can be effective for losing weight depending on your individual circumstances. Some people are able to stick to ketogenic diet long enough to lose weight and improve blood sugar. Many others find it hard to consistently restrict carbs. It can be determined ahead of time who will benefit. And it's not clear whether someone who benefits from a ketogenic diet might have been just as successful on a less restrictive eating plan, such as the Mediterranean diet. There may be risks associated with a ketogenic diet, including blood sugar fluctuations for those taking diabetes medications and micronutrient deficits. If you want to try a ketogenic diet, seek doctor supervision to develop a true ketogenic eating plan that can be implemented in a safe way. Well, we have run out of time for today's episode of Health Issues. Be sure to listen at the same time next week. We hope you've enjoyed it. I'm Mark Newman, reading for the Triangle Radio Reading Service. The content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. This broadcast is readily available as a podcast after the broadcast at our website, TriangleReadingService.org. So long until next time. If you have any comment or questions, please call 919-832-5138 and stay healthy.